Hello and welcome to the MB Om podcast, where you will learn to master the business of yoga with guests from around the world who have experienced becoming successful yoga teachers, studio owners, and much more. Now, here's your host, Amanda Kingsmith.
Hey everyone, and welcome to another episode of the MB Om podcast. I hope that everyone enjoyed the last couple episodes. They've been solo episodes, talking about various different subjects and answering your questions. And today I'm really excited because I have a really cool guest. Her name is Kate Connell Potts, and she's somebody that I actually met through Melissa Ledger, who was also on the podcast from The Smart Yoga Teacher. And Kate has a really cool business around teaching private yoga. And it's something that I feel like is talked about in the yoga world a lot. It's like, how do I make money? How do I become financially stable? Well, teach private yoga because, you know, you can charge a lot more for that and it's a lot more value for both the student and the teacher. But it's like, how do I do that? And so Kate is here to talk exactly about that. She talks about sort of her background with private yoga, how she got into it, how you can create a business around private yoga, and some of the tips and tricks that she's outlined in her book that she just released. And all the info will be there for you. So I really hope that you enjoy this episode. I loved speaking to her. I felt like I could have talked to her all day. Without further ado, though, here's the interview with Kate. Well, thank you so much for coming on the podcast today, Kate. It's super cool to have you here.
Thanks. Thanks for having me. I'm excited to chat.
Yeah. Where are you joining me from today?
I live in Iowa City, Iowa, which is a smallish college town in Iowa. And I grew up in Massachusetts, but my husband is from Iowa. So I transferred out here for college and then we always plan to move and we just never have because we love it here.
Well, that's cool. So, there's nothing wrong with that. I love that. And can you tell me how you got into yoga at first?
Yes. So when I was in high school, I was on the swim team and I played lacrosse as well. And one of the people that I swam with and played lacrosse with was actually really into yoga. And it was really interesting because at the time, I mean, we were like 16 and I didn't know that many people that did yoga, but she was just had something about her. Like she was really interesting to me. She would like go on vacation by herself to surf camp in Mexico. Like she was super independent and, she was amazing. I've lost touch with her now, but she's probably just as kick-ass as an adult as she was as a 16-year-old. So she was doing yoga and was going to this teacher training actually when we were in high school. So I went with her to a couple classes at like our local hometown gym and it was like this really dark, like dingy gym. And I took some classes there and it was this like dichotomy of this is really hard. And then this other side was like, I was really good at it because I was really innately just flexible. And it was the first time I felt really good at something that was in more of that physical realm. So I kept going. And then I went to college and did some yoga there. And then I moved to Iowa and got a lot more serious about that until a teacher was like, you're kind of a natural teacher. You should jump into training. And so when I was 21, that's what I did. I took a yoga teacher training.
Oh, wow.
And the rest is history.
Yeah, that's super cool. I love hearing that it's like something that you felt good at doing because it's like the exact same thing for me. Like sports row is really awkward for me. I'm left-handed. So I like always had a hard time figuring out like what hand to use things for in sports. And it's like, you don't have to decide that in yoga.
Yeah. And I think there's something to that. I think that a lot of people that feel like they weren't really good at conventional sports and things like that feel like there's a finesse to yoga that they get, which is exciting.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. And then, so you took your teacher training in Iowa?
So I was in college at the time. And so I had a summer job the summer before it started and I moved to Pennsylvania that summer and saved all the money being I was a camp counselor actually that summer. And then I came back and used all that money that I made that whole summer and I paid for my training.
That's incredible.
So, yeah, that was my plan. And then came back to the training. It was a 9-month weekend training. And when I was doing the training, the plan was, I really wanted to open a yoga studio and I didn't have like a concrete plan, but that was kind of what I thought the process was. So I went through the training and the way that it was set up was, it was a really smart intelligently designed 200 hour. I mean, it really wasn't one of those ones where I think a lot of people end up in trainings that let them down in some way. And they don't maybe know in the process or know ahead of time the questions to ask to figure that out. But this was not the case with this training at all. I think it was really thorough. But we didn't do any business conversation or, you know, training until the very last weekend. And so at that point, it was the last weekend of the training and it was May and I was actually graduating college that same weekend. My parents were in town and I had to miss part of the Saturday session because I was walking in my graduation at the University of Iowa. And the night before, the teacher trainer was like, "So what is everybody's intention with their certification?" And I was like, "Well, I'm going to open a yoga studio." And he was like, "No, you're not." He's like, "It's not a good idea. It's not a good business path or model. You should really be an expert at teaching yoga." And, you know, at the time I was like, "Yeah, whatever," and didn't really take part. And so I was like, "I'm going to do what I'm going to do." So I actually did, you know, come out of teacher training and I taught a lot of classes and I said yes to every opportunity that I could find. I spent hours, at the time Pinterest was starting to get really big. So I spent hours just finding blog posts and things about business and things about, you know, yoga business and piecing together like these different elements of advice and suggestions about how to grow a business, but also how to, you know, teach and how to begin to build this kind of career doing this. And that's what I did. I was a freelance yoga teacher for a while. And then I had an opportunity to join a yoga studio as a manager. I did that. And then I had the opportunity to become the managing partner of that studio. So I came in as the third owner of that. Realized that that teacher trainer was right. It wasn't my jam. And I left that. And then I started to focus more on how I could actually make more sustainable money teaching yoga. Cause I was in my mid-20s and I never got a real job. I graduated from college that same weekend and decided I would just jump in and try to make yoga work because I wasn't leaving corporate. I wasn't supporting a family. I didn't really have anything to lose really. So, I started teaching more private lessons because I was finding that the consistency in that type of work was providing me with more financial kind of padding than bouncing around all these classes. And I really enjoyed it. And I was figuring out a way to do it in a way that was different. I wasn't just teaching a group class to one person. I was really digging in the facets of what this person needed and evaluating that and mirroring that with what they wanted and beginning to create some consistency in their practice and helping them with tools beyond just our 1 hour session each week. And then that quickly kind of moved into building up my client docket and making it more sustainable. And then really starting to just capitalize on this idea that I was a private yoga teacher. Although along the way, of course, there were a lot of instances where it felt, like I was going against the status quo. And so it was kind of hard. It wasn't like there was like this, like it was easier to do it this way. It was more challenging in a lot of ways, especially with a lot of the mindset stuff about being in my mid-20s and asking people to pay $100 for a private yoga lesson when I probably wouldn't have at that point. So there was money mindset stuff. Totally. There was a lot of, you know, things wrapped around being in my 20s, and I'm still in my 20s now. So there's stuff that comes up with that. But yeah, that, and then that snowballed into, you know, starting to take some online business training and then realizing that not everybody was doing it this way. And there was a lot of people that wanted to make a living teaching yoga and haven't been able to. And so I got really interested in more of the teaching side, which is what my business is predominantly now. I'm helping other teachers do the same thing in the realm of private yoga. So,
yeah, I love that.
Yeah.
I mean, that's like kind of my experience when I came out of teacher training. I came out of teacher training a little bit later than you did, but I was like, I don't think that I can teach enough like group classes to like make this sustainable for myself. And I felt like when I was in teacher training as well, it was like asking people like, you know, "Are you going to teach?" And they're like, "Yeah, I think I want to own a yoga studio." And I was like, "Why does everyone want to own a yoga studio? Like, that's not the only thing we can do with yoga teaching."
Absolutely. And I think that not everybody's positioned to own a yoga studio. I think that there's even evidence of that, like in some of my circles of fellow teacher friends or even like my local community. People come out of teacher training and open a studio right away. And every time it happens, I'm like, you're really rolling the dice because you need so much more, I think, business acumen and training to actually have a successful brick and mortar than you do to start as a freelance yoga teacher and build and build and build, and then eventually maybe make that jump.
I agree with that.
For most of us, I don't think the smartest way to start your living making, you know, teaching yoga is to be paying somebody else a monthly bill. And that's what happens in a yoga studio as well. So, not everybody's cut out to be a yoga studio owner, and not everybody should. I mean, there's a lot of ways to take a part of the pie, but that's when I think we have to just get creative and also be really honest about what we want. I mean, sometimes I still have conversations like, oh, I wish Iowa City had a yoga studio like this. And this is like kind of what I feel like I would bring to the scene. And then I have to talk myself off that ledge. Like I talk to my husband, like, what do you think about this? And then he's kind of like, well, what do you think about this, this, and this? And I'm like, oh yeah. So I, you know, maybe someday, but there's so many other facets to do this work. I just think that, that's not the only one.
Yeah. Yeah. I completely agree with that. What was your experience like being like a third owner in a yoga studio?
You know, it was really challenging because I think that when I came in, at that point, you know, I had only been teaching for about a year and, but at that time I had been spending a lot of time, you know, reading and, kind of like self-educating myself on some of the facets of business. And I always joke that I'm kind of an anomaly because I love teaching yoga as much as I love business, which is people don't feel that way. Most yoga teachers are really think like business is like a four-letter word and it feels really big and overwhelming and they wish they could just show up and teach and not have to deal with a lot of that stuff. But I've always loved it. My partner owned a bookstore when we were younger and then he did contracting work for a while. We have a side business. We own rental property. So I've always been interested in it. So really immersing myself that year after college and learning more about it it went a long way. I was starting to learn a lot of stuff about branding and setting an intention around what you're doing and who you're attracting and, consistency and marketing and funnels and things like this. And there was a part of me that knew that the way that the studio had been set up from its inception was not really going to be able to ever lead it to the kind of success that it needed to be sustainable. But I was also like at that time, 22, 23, and I was basically being handed a yoga studio to run and there was very little buy-in. And it was like, it felt really kick-ass. Like it felt awesome. And so my ego was like, yeah, do it. Even though this voice was like, the foundation of this is not very solid. The partners, one of them was more on the financial side and the other one was more, kind of the contributor of the finances, if that makes sense. They owned the building the studio was in. They, were a practitioner in another modality. So they would refer clients to the studio. And then that second person did more of like the payment and taking care of bills and things like that. So none of us were ever really on the same sheet of music. And I should have read some of those red flags ahead of time. But it gave me a lot of chance to like get really into things like working with staff and figuring out consistency of classes and doing some marketing things and seeing what was working and what wasn't. That was like the height of Groupon at that point. So okay. Doing some stuff like that, learning the hard way about things like that, scheduling and the stress of wondering if, you know, I'm going to get a call that morning because somebody doesn't show up, coming up with ideas to get people to stay in the door. So a lot of stuff. I mean, I learned a lot, and a lot of it was very transferable to being in business on my own as well. But I also learned some hard and fast no's. Like I didn't want to be in business with anybody else anymore after that. And I didn't want to own a yoga studio ever after that. And I didn't want, I didn't want to set it up in a lot of ways that it was set up before. Like the philosophy before I came out as a manager was like, this is a place for everybody. And I knew deep down, like, that's not the way that you frame a business. But by then it was like the train had already kind of left the station and I was just hopping on. So, it taught me a lot though about working with other people and then and then not wanting to work with other people. Yeah. So
do you feel like that was an important lesson for you to learn in your career? Like,
if yeah, absolutely. Because I think the thing is I think that because I didn't have some of those like conventional, like sitting at a desk working, you know, 9 to 5 and clocking in and clocking out and having that kind of like experience of more of a lot of yoga teachers come from corporate. And so they have this idea of like the other side, or they have this idea of kind of the, like some of the downside things of, you know, working with other people or getting into situations that they just don't really enjoy. And that motivates them to like get through the hard stuff in business or in teaching, those road bumps that we all hit. Mm-hmm. And I didn't have a lot of that from the get go. I mean, coming out of college, I didn't have a ton of work experience. I was a lifeguard and, did that all through high school. And that was what I always did. I just always had jobs in aquatics. And then I jumped into yoga. So I think that was huge, to help me really formulate that so that I had that little almost like nugget of like, this is what I don't want, to motivate me through some of those resistances. But the other piece is, I think that a lot of times with like business, we hear, and I do this too, like get really clear about who you want to work with and what you want your life to look like, and get really clear about who you want to help and how you want to help them and what is unique and special about you. I mean, it's like niching and branding and dream client 101. I mean, Anybody that's picked up a business book, you hear stuff like that. And that feels really overwhelming in the beginning. What all of your yeses are feels really far away. Whereas if you can get some of the no's down in the beginning, it's way easier. And so I got a lot of my no's right away. Like I was teaching for $15 at a gym. Like, no. I picked up some kid yoga class. No, definitely no. The yoga studio thing was a no. So it helped me really start to gain some clarity around what was definitely a no for me, so that I could start to focus on like some of the yeses and then get really clear about the yes, which is private yoga. So I think that's some of the advice that I have for new teachers, is say yes to stuff so that you can decide if it's still a yes or if it's a no. And not everything is going to be a yes and everything is going to be a no, but that was one of the things right away, like realizing what my no's were was a step towards realizing clarity, and a much easier step than like sitting there and like, you know, trying to journal out what I wanted to do after I'd only been teaching yoga for a short amount of time. I mean, it's really hard to design a business around your niche and your dream client when you don't have a ton of experience or you haven't had a lot of no's. So that was really huge for that reason too.
Yeah, definitely. I think that's so huge, is like, you just get experience, because you can't really figure out what you want until you sort of like dip your fingers in it and kind of like understand how it works and get sort of the behind the scenes of it.
Absolutely. And sometimes the behind the scenes is like better than you think, or it's nothing like you think. And that's what I try to remind myself a lot of times with the studio piece, is like when I have these little like, oh, that would be lovely. It's like, well, but what do I really want my life to look like? And, you know, what do I really want my life to feel like? And what is the reality in which I'm like, I'm consciously crafting that life right now? And how does that match up? And how does that line up? And, you know, that gives you a lot of insight too, but it's harder to listen to that, I think, in the beginning. But the more you can do that, I think the better off you are in the long run.
Yes, definitely. I think that's, you touched on such an important thing there. It's like looking at what you want your life to actually look like, like thinking about like, you know, in 5 and 10 years, like, what do you want to be doing? Like, do you want to be traveling with a partner? Do you want to have kids? And then seeing how your business fits into that.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And so when did you teach your first private lesson?
I taught my first private lesson actually while I was in teacher training. So the 200-hour training that I taught was really, it's the person who taught it teaches a very different style of yoga now. But at the time, his philosophy was that you can't teach to a group until you're able to teach to an individual. And so he came from doing a lot of Mysore at the time. He studied with Andre Lapa, who is really a genius of movement. A lot of people don't know who Andre Lapa is, but he's been in the yoga world for a really long time. And he is really, I think, one of the people that brought like range of motion to the forefront. A lot of his postures are like things that he's made up. It's really esoteric stuff. But range of motion for yoga teachers is kind of like a novel idea. I mean, yoga therapists know all about range of motion, but a lot of yoga teachers don't. So my teacher's philosophy based on like studying with Andre, based on studying with, or teaching at the time, like a kind of like a guided Mysore-esque style group experience where everybody was moving through their own sequence that was heavily informed by Ashtanga, but was still modified in whatever ways they needed it to. It wasn't strict Ashtanga in the sense where there was use of props and he was doing different adjustments and assists and he was breaking down postures to their more remedial versions and giving people repetitions and things like that. That really informed this idea that he felt like in order to teach to many, you needed to know how to teach to one. And that's how he taught the 200 hour. So we didn't actually even practice teach in group settings until we had already moved through quite a bit of work on teaching the individual, which included a lot of things that I teach now. So getting, you know, a conversation going with somebody and having an assessment with someone and beginning to really look at their body and their mind in this more like holistic way, instead of just kind of being in a group class and making it more one size fits all. Yeah. So a lot of the practice teaching that I did when I was in my 200 hour was with people doing individual sessions. And that was, you know, moving through different types of intakes and teaching them sun salutations and then modifying those sun salutations so that they were more, you know, therapeutic for whatever I was seeing was showing up in their body. Like maybe I was adding in a different kind of back bend, or we were adding in kneeling dog because they had really tight shoulders and downward dog and things like that. So my first like not paid for private sessions were happening during my 200 hour. And then quickly after that, I did get a couple of clients quickly after that, but I had a hard time turning those people into long-term clients. And I also wasn't charging very much. I wasn't charging what I knew I probably should have been charging. So, I actually had a little bit more experience teaching individual stuff than group right off the bat. But then I started teaching a lot more group classes and then trying to come up with more of like a intentional way to find clients from those group offerings, workshops, classes, series, things like that.
Okay, that's cool. And how did you go about doing that? Because I think that that's probably, you know, for people listening, they're probably like, okay, this sounds awesome, but like,
How do I do it?
How do I do it?
Yes, absolutely. So, and I think this is such a big part of the conversation because I remember talking to my teacher, you know, at the time he also ran a yoga festival here in the Midwest. And I was just sitting there and I was like, I just don't know how to find more clients. And he was like, Kate, it's a snowball effect. Like, just keep going and they're going to tell everybody that they know and you're going to get all these referrals and you don't have to work for it after a while. And I was like, so pissed. I was like, really? Like, that is the worst advice ever. Like, give me something really tangible and specific. And so that's what I had to do then. I had to like go out and figure out what the tangible and specific stuff was. And it was hard. But the biggest thing that I started to do was really to think about and reflect on the types of classes I was teaching and start to pare down where I was teaching group classes and how they were set up. So, you know, people, I was teaching at the University of Iowa and I was getting paid, like, I think it was $20 an hour, but I had to pay to park. So I had to pay like $185 to park. So I ended up making like $18 a class and I had to be there, you know, for like an hour and a half because I had to park and then walk in and then be there for 2 minutes early and then yeah. Nobody ever from those classes was turning into private clients. And that was because they were college students who were getting these classes for free and they weren't my like ideal demographic. So that class went, I had to let it go. And I was teaching two at the time and, I liked them. They were fun. I taught them for a long time, but I had to cut those out so that I could focus on the more, highly concentrated, basically classes that were a really good alignment with who was showing up the consistency in which they were showing up and people that were likely to make the jump then to work individually with me. So I started to put more of my eggs in those types of baskets. I started to teach only series-based group classes, so no drop-ins, because I wasn't able to really create the kind of long-term relationship with somebody if they were just going to come once in a while. And somebody who was going to come once in a while also wasn't going to make a really great private client necessarily, because they weren't necessarily ready to do that consistent long-term work. And so it just made sense to have more of a series-based session going on and then focus on the people in there and also focus on those things that really cater to the individual. So I talk a lot about how I think that as private yoga teachers, we need to start teaching group classes like private yoga teachers, which means that you're giving people homework and you're giving them specific feedback and you are talking about things like lack of symmetry in the body and how to bring symmetry forward and helping them figure out where there's room, you know, to play the edge and teaching them some of these things that are actually really advanced in a group class, but that are a really intrinsic part of one-on-one work. So that was the first thing I did, is I really focused on the group classes I was teaching and made some tricky decisions, which were kind of scary because once I let some of that stuff go, I knew I was letting go of some reliable income. And so I had to work on growing the other things. And then I also started to work on some really focused workshops. So workshops that were going to attract a very specific type of person. So at the time that was Create a Home Yoga Practice. That was a workshop that I did and I taught it over and over again in different settings. I refined it. I, you know, worked on it to make it so that it was an experience, but also I was giving people kind of the first few steps and then inviting them to take the next couple steps individually with me.
Okay.
Cool. And then the last thing I did was I started to get really connected to what else was going on in my community that had nothing to do with yoga. So I, instead of networking with yoga teachers, which I think a lot of times is what we do as new yoga teachers, we miss the camaraderie of our 200 hour. And so we like set out to make friends with other yoga teachers in the area. But instead of doing that, I mean, I did that still, but instead of focusing just on that, I started to connect with, chiropractors and practitioners and people that were specializing in different modalities in my area. And I did this in the most organic way that I could. So I was asking my current clients and students who they were going to for chiropractic care and who they were seeing for acupuncturists and who their physical therapist was. And this would come up either in the intake during our private session, or I would just like have conversations and be like, oh, who do you go to for that? Which comes up really organically in conversation if you let it or if you kind of lead it that way. And then I reached out to those people and I said, I specialize in individual lessons. I would love to hear about your work because I inevitably have clients that need this type of, you know, service and modality and care. And I really made it not like what they could do for me, but what I could do for them, because I was at the time building my private practice and I wanted to have some people in my network that I could refer current and future clients onto.
Yeah. That's like such a smart idea. Did you just brainstorm that on your own or had you read like that was a good strategy?
I'm sure I read it somewhere that like reaching out was really good and like collaborations and stuff like that was really good. But I also had read a lot that like there's a way to organically leverage other people's communities without having necessarily a huge community yet yourself. And so these ideas of doing like a workshop for yoga for back pain with a chiropractor just kind of could be mutually beneficial. I could bring in a few people, the chiropractor could bring in a few people and stuff like that. I definitely didn't read in the beginning that you shouldn't make it about you. I think that's something that we forget though. And so I tried to frame it mostly because I felt like kind of a jerk. Like I had some mindset stuff already. Like I didn't feel super pro at the time and I felt really young. And so I really wanted to spin it so that I felt beneficial. You know, it felt beneficial to the person that I was connecting with, because I knew they were busy, right? And they weren't there to just help me grow my business. And so that was one of the things I did early on. But now I think I see that more and more, because I think we see through it now. Like we see people do stuff like that and we're like, oh, just remember, like, it's not all about just what people can do for you, but how you can help other people.
Yeah.
So that was one of the things, you know, I tried to try to be cognizant of, because it doesn't feel good.
Yeah, definitely.
You know, so
cool. I love that. That's such an inspirational story to hear about. I'm curious about the payment process, because in the last like couple months, I've started teaching more private yoga, and it's always that awkward thing where it's like, oh, how much do you charge? And then it's like, how much do I charge?
Yes. So, you know, I think that this is a really, like, this is a conversation that all of us have at some point. And I think that because a lot of us, you know, there's not like a fat, hard and fast rule about it. I've thought so many times, like, should I just make a blog post where it's like, if this, then that, and just like come up with a way to like help people actually make a very specific amount for a private yoga lesson. And I've thought about it. Like, I've sat down and started to write it, and I've kind of mapped it out, like what it would look like. And I always stop myself because I feel like it's so relative. And that's what makes it so tricky, I think, is like somebody saying to you, like, yes, it should cost $85. You're like, okay, $85. And then you're like, well, Kate said it was $85. But there's more to it than that. So what I like to have people think about is really reflect on all the value of what they're bringing forth to the private yoga lessons. And this is when it starts to become, I think, more eye-opening, that private yoga lessons then aren't, you know, you just showing up and teaching. Their preparation, their packages, their included support, their tangible items, potentially homework, like a lot of things that then contribute to what somebody is getting from you. And all of those things help you come up with what the actual like monetary value is, not the benefits, of course, but the actual value of what somebody is going to associate with that service. Now, we don't always charge them the absolute value. So the value could be, you know, it costs, the value is $200. So maybe we charge $100 because they bought in a pack of 10, something like that. Mm-hmm. So what I like people to consider is, first of all, I think that we need to address like any mindset issues that come up around money. And all of us have them. Even if you're not 21 teaching private yoga lessons, you know, whatever the case is, we all have our stuff around money. I actually had a woman in a training, an in-person training that, was like rich. Like she was rich. Like she had, I just, from the stories that she was telling and from where she like lived, and I was just picking, like she, her partner was the breadwinner, had an amazing job. And she was like, I really don't feel comfortable charging more than $50 an hour to my friends. And she was teaching yoga to her rich friends. And I was like, girlfriend, like, so even people that like theoretically shouldn't, like, quote, shouldn't have money issues, they do. Like, rich people having a hard time charging their rich friends more than $50 for a private lesson. So keep that in mind, like, deal with your money stuff. Yeah. And then sit down and really think about like what goes into your private lesson and write it out. So if you're doing packages, which I highly suggest that everybody moves away from one-time private yoga lesson model and moves into a package program, package system. Think about all the stuff that goes in there so that you can speak to that and you can say, you know, these are all the things that come into this price point. And then thirdly, think about a range. So the range is like the lowest end that you feel comfortable going without feeling resentful. And we have to be really honest with ourselves about what that money point is. I would say that nobody should, no matter where you live, should go below $60 as that lowest point. And then the highest point of that range. So I call it the good, great gulp range. And good is the lowest you'd possibly go for an hour long lesson, or potentially if you teach 75 or 90 minute, if that works better for you. It should be a lot more than 60 then, though, if that's the case. And then the middle point and then the highest point, which is where you eventually want to work up to, but it feels like you might need some time to grow into that number. You might feel like you need a little bit more experience. And you can begin to work into that price point. And then the other thing with money is you need to tell people what it costs and then just be quiet. Like, don't apologize for it. Don't skirt around it. I used to say things like, well, it costs this much if that's okay, or it costs this much, but da 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 da, or it costs this much, but if you buy five, then it ends up being only this much. Like, I used to apologize for pricing. Mm-hmm. And there is some like overt things that we do like that undermine us. But then there's also some like more, you know, less mindful things that we can do around money that can really start to erode at our professionalism and even just our abundance and kind of the message we're putting out there. So those are kind of my tips around money. There are some things to think about too when it comes to pricing. Like, if you are a newer teacher, then you know, charge a little bit less, but don't be like, don't slash your prices like crazy. Don't be the cheapest person. Don't compare your prices to what everybody else is charging because they have their own money issues and you're adopting their own pricing. Don't undermine what you have to offer just because you're a newer teacher. And I know a lot of listeners probably are in more of that newer teacher because that newer teacher time frame, because we have so many people now coming into the industry. But don't devalue it so much that you're starting to make, you know, wages kind of unlivable. Like, it's all of our responsibility to be charging enough that all of us can make a living teaching yoga. So, those are my thoughts around money.
Yeah. No, I think that those are all really great. I know it's like this awkward thing, especially when you're newer and you're like, does this seem fair? Is it fair? Like, I think I'm okay, but hopefully you're getting value. It's like this, you kind of have to be confident with what you're doing.
And I think that's a good point. Like, if you're charging a premium price for something, which you are, because it's provider to practitioner, it's private, it's individualized, it's highly customized, it costs more money and people are going to expect it to cost more money. But you also need to be commanding the types of experience and benefits and outcomes that the type of money that's being exchanged requires. And I think that's great. Like, I was actually just talking, one of my best friends does quite robust teacher trainings here in Iowa City. She has 200 hour and 500 hours. And she's doing her first module for a 500 hour this weekend. And she has some people coming into town that have taken quite a bit of, you know, extensive training beyond the 200 hour. And we were talking about how it demands more from us as teachers to really, like, even though her and I both have personalities where we can kind of just wing it. And I think a lot of us do as yoga teachers, like, we have this part of us that can just kind of go with the flow and we can just sequence on the fly and do some of these things. It doesn't mean we should. I mean, just because you can doesn't mean that you should. And I really think that sequencing is something that should be pre-planned, which surprises a lot of people. But that's another topic. I'll come back and do a different episode on that. Yeah. but you know, we were talking about how sometimes some of that nervousness about wanting to deliver a certain experience helps us really arrive and do all the things that we want to do and prepare in the ways that we want and take the time to do that, to design the sequence and the homework and that intake assessment so that it's really good. And it calls us to, like, level up a little bit almost, you know. If you're charging somebody $30 for a private yoga lesson and you normally get something similar for a group class or $50 for a group class, then, you know, you might subconsciously be a little bit inclined to just, you know, show up. I mean, we're busy. A lot of yoga teachers have other jobs or are balancing other responsibilities. And so it can be really hard in the beginning to have your really focus be completely on all of these different facets. But I think that that's one of the things we need to think about, is that we're demanding really incredible experiences and that costs a certain amount of money. And then the opposite works for us. Like, we're charging a lot. And so we need to show up and really, hold the space for our clients and teach them things and learn more as a teacher in the process so that we can provide more and really be completely present and attentive to our clients in that way, which we all want to do, but it can get tricky to consistently show up in that way. And I think charging what is not what you're worth, because I don't think we, like, charge what we're worth per se. I think that's kind of a fallacy, but charging what the experience is worth is a really great key to do that.
Yeah, definitely. I think that that's a really good point, is that it's like, we might be worth a lot more, but it's like, what is the experience worth to them based on how much time we're putting into it?
And the whole, like, what it's worth to them is going to be completely based on how you're able to articulate what it is they're going to get. Yeah. If you say, you know, there's a difference between saying, like, oh yeah, I work individually and we can work on those couple of poses that you have questions about, or the other side of that, like, I work individually with clients and we do a full intake. We get a really good feel for what your home practice space looks like. I help you create a home practice space and I throw in some props for the 6-week long package. And, each week there's homework, so you can start to work on this on your own, but there's also built-in support. And the goal is to really help you begin to create a practice so that we can start to tackle some of those imbalances you feel, or help you sleep through the night, or whatever their pain point or problem is. That feels a lot different than that first answer. I mean, people's problems aren't that they, you know, want to be more comfortable in Downward Dog. People are not, that's not their ultimate goal. It's just to feel really great in Downward Dog. There's a reason why they're there beyond just, you know, showing up for yoga, like community, because they want to feel a sense of connection, because they're, you know, they don't feel like they have that in some capacity, or they're stressed out, or they're overwhelmed, or yoga for X, Y, and Z, like insert something here. So the more clear you are about the experience that you give and the benefits you can give people, which you're going to get more and more clear about that as you do that more, then the more you can speak to that. And that's your job, that it is your job to explain what private yoga lessons are, why they're valuable, and what the benefits are, not just like what's included in a package, like, oh, you get a yoga tune-up ball and you get some props. Like, people don't care. Like, they care, but they don't care about that. They care about what the outcome is, what the benefits are. And that's your job. Your job is to educate them about what the benefits are. And if you can't do that, you're not going to be able to sell a lot of private lessons, or you're going to sell ones here and there, because people are going to have a problem with Downward Dog, or they're going to need to learn a couple of poses because they're pregnant and they need to make, you know, some adjustments in their group classes. But you're not going to get long-term client relationships. You're not going to be able to get that momentum going. And so that is really one of the most important things I can share, is that you have to get really confident and clear about what you offer, and you have to tell people. It's your job to educate people about what they essentially need, and that you offer that. It's like sales 101, but people get afraid about sales. So don't think about it. Think about it as like educating, or, you know, sharing the benefits of yoga.
Yeah, definitely. And it's so interesting how people like freak out with the word sales just in general. It's just a funny thing in our society. But so you teach group classes, and at what point do you tell people that you're a private yoga teacher and offer them something more?
Yes. So I think this is another way that you can frame things as well. So, you know, I don't think that you want to be like an ongoing billboard, or like kind of like an endless tape of the fact that you offer private lessons. But I think that it's really good to frame first yourself as a private yoga teacher, and then secondly, as somebody who teaches some group classes. And the reason why I say that is because, again, I think that the way that you teach group classes as a private yoga teacher, it needs to feel distinctly different than what, you know, is going on in other group classes. None of that's wrong, because that's how I started yoga. Most of us are starting in a group experience, which is new in the modern world. Like, yoga was not like that when it started. It was very much passed on from teacher to student, and it was very individualized. And as we start to swing back to that, that's one of the biggest mindset things that private yoga teachers have to work on, is that we're, you know, trying to reshape what people can get from working one-on-one with us, when they could drop into a class at, you know, Lululemon for free, or $5 on the street at lunchtime, or, you know, insert whatever crazy deal is available for a group class here.
Yeah.
So, you know, starting by first framing yourself mentally as somebody who's a private yoga teacher who teaches some group classes, I think is important. And that means that when you have conversations with potential students to your group classes, or when students in your group classes, you begin to form a relationship with them, and they ask you questions like, I really love taking your class once a week, where else do you teach group classes? And your answer, instead of like being like, oh, well, I teach this class and I teach this other class on Thursday, is, well, mostly I work individually with people to help them create home practices. That's the bulk of the work that I do. I also teach another class on Thursday. I'd be happy to share with you information about both of those things if you feel like you want to create some more consistency in your practice. I mean, that is a really different conversation than, oh, I teach on Thursdays.
Totally. Yeah.
Da, 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 da. So it's, again, it's framing the confidence that you have in what you're doing. And then it's also, you know, kind of reiterating the focus, which for you might be building your private client practice. So that's one of those things. The other thing is, I think that it's really important that people are beginning to see the relationship between some of the stuff that's happening in a group class and how that could be, enhanced or expedited or capitalized on in a private lesson. So some of the things that you might do in a group class could really open up that experience for people. Giving people a chance to experiment with different variations of poses instead of just teaching like one version, and giving people kind of more of a hierarchy of like, try this and then maybe try this and maybe try this. And then weaving in a little bit of conversation around how they can start to dictate where they're going to go depending on the day and what's going on in their body is something that happens in private lessons. And so being able to weave some of that stuff in, or even if you're doing something that's an asymmetrical pose, telling people to start on the right side and then having them do the left side and then having them pause and notice the difference between the two sides and then taking a third pass at the other side that felt the most tight is going to start open up this idea that, oh, like a group class is only ever going to have me stretch left and right for 5 breaths each side. And that means that every time that I come to a group class, I'm going to get more flexible on both sides, but I'm never going to get both sides towards a place of symmetry. Like if my right rotator cuff is really, if I've had an injury or I have some, you know, just imbalance, even if I haven't had an injury, which happens, as we become more and more versed in our yoga practice, I feel like we find more and more little intricacies where we're like, oh, how did, you know, like we get more and more aware of that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. That really gives people a chance to kind of connect some of those dots. Like if I want my sides to be symmetrical, then I can't spend 5 breaths on both sides always. Because if I do, I'm still 70% on this side and 100% on this side, theoretically. And then that continues on. So it might be more and more open, but I'm never more and more symmetrical. So those are some things I like to teach in group classes, which my hope is that it starts to create these little links from these little lessons in the group experience that are going to help them start to see that they're having these different revelations that can be enhanced or again, like, you know, expanded upon in private lessons. I'm also really clear, like my specialty as a private yoga teacher is helping people create practices at their home, beginning to create more self-sustaining practitioners, essentially. Not that they're never going to need me or they're never going to want, you know, a group experience or to work closely with a teacher, because a lot of people want community and camaraderie and want that. But that they can start to create, you know, a ritual around their own practice. So I also, you know, give people homework. I also lead conversations that I have with clients before and after, like, how are things going? Have you been trying this at home? And I invite people to work with me really specifically and really individually. And I say, you know, that a whole conversation around, you know, we're working on A, B, and C. I really think that we're at a place where this would be a really good introduction to working individually and beginning to build out your private practice and working together on this. And it's not a blanket statement. I don't sit at the front of the class at the end and say, just so everybody knows, I also teach private lessons. If you have questions, let me know. Like, I don't say that. I go and have conversations with people individually, because that's something that we forget. Like, this is individual yoga, private yoga is so highly customized and so active. Like, it is very personalized work. And so the way that we get people to work with us isn't by being super passive, by saying like, hey, if you have any questions about private lessons, let me know. And like, then your voice kind of trails off and you're like, let me know. Or you post something on Facebook, like, hey everybody, if you're interested in learning more about private yoga lessons, then, you know, here's my website and that kind of thing. That stuff can work. Like, it can, you can get clients that way. However, most of the time, the more active things are going to really lead to private client relationships. Like after class saying something like, you know, today we were working on X, Y, and Z, and I know you've been focusing on these things. I really think that it would be beneficial to touch base and talk, not in a pushy way, but touch base and talk about what some of your goals are. Like, I would love to grab a cup of tea or, you know, a cup of coffee this week and talk through some of that stuff. And then you're able to talk through some of that stuff and hear what their goals are and kind of take that next step, which is highly active. It's going to take time out of your schedule and their schedule. But you have to trust that you're kind of building those little building blocks so that they've had an experience with you in some way, whether they have come to class or if it's been more passive, they've landed on your website randomly or there's been a referral of some kind from a friend or another practitioner. And then the next step is having a really personalized conversation with them about what their goals are, what the value and the benefit and the potential outcomes are from working with you. You've had a chance to talk through, you know, how your process works and how it's valuable, and even share some stories of what other people have experienced from working with you. And this is when it's really good to make sure you're asking those kind of questions of your clients that you have, or your students, so that you have an idea and kind of like a bank of what people have been experiencing and words they've used and things like that. And then you invite them to take the next step, which is working with you. And you even suggest potentially what you think the best next step is, whether that's, you know, a package of 5 lessons or, you know, your 10 pack lesson package, because you think it's a good fit based on what they've outlined. There's a lot we can learn from how other practitioners function. So every time I go to the chiropractor's office, they make an effort to set up a next appointment with me. And that's because they know that if I leave, I'm gone. Like, I'm out the door. I don't have another session scheduled. I don't have another appointment scheduled. And so that's something to learn from there. You know, other massage therapists ask really detailed intake questions about bodies and history and health and things like that. We can learn a ton from that. There's a lot to be learned from other practitioners that are doing, you know, individualized work. And those are some of the things that they're doing. And those are some of the things that I've used to build my practice. And definitely those are the tips that I share with the teachers that I work with through the Art of Teaching Private Yoga, is to get really intentional and, you know, systematic, but still, free, like not super stuffy systematic, but still, like, there's a way to kind of court people towards working with you individually. Mm-hmm. And it's, again, it's not like a gross trickery. It's not like, you know, you're like twisting their arm to work with you privately. It's value based. Like, you're offering something of immense value and they need it. And they need the work to feel how they want to feel and to show up how they want to show up. And so, again, that's our job, is to lead them to that place.
Yeah. And it sounds like there's a lot of like genuine care involved with that too. Like, when you make an announcement in front of like 10 or 15 people, it's like, okay, I do this. Like, this could be great for any of you or not great for any of you. But when it's like, hey, you know, I was watching you in class, I've seen this, I've seen how your body's been changing, I would love to talk further about that. It's mm-hmm. like something where it's very one-on-one, and it's like, it's way more personalized. It feels like you actually care about them.
Yeah. And I love that, because that's a great reminder. Like, this is really individualized work that we're doing. And so it's like, as we talk about it, it's like, well, it's a no-brainer. Of course, that's how I should do it. But it's like, if you are more open to what other people are doing, you'll realize that a lot of times we're trying to get the most out of the least amount of effort or work or connection. And I think social media kind of makes that seem way more apparent. Like, we see a lot of passive stuff on social media, and then we kind of model that, like, oh, I should just do that, or I should post like this. And we see people with huge Instagram followings that are making a living teaching yoga. And we lose sight of the fact that connection is what private yoga is all about. Like, yes, I know a lot of us are following online entrepreneurs, and we're reading advice and listening to podcasts and blog posts. And both of us have online businesses, so people are finding us that way. But that online business is in some ways kind of like confusing, I think, a lot of us that are on the ground trying to teach private yoga lessons or trying to make a living in our community teaching yoga. And do not forget that the most impactful way to make a living teaching yoga, and certainly the most impactful way to find more clients, is to genuinely connect with people, having conversations, being available, and honestly getting away from the computer and having conversations and, you know, getting out in your community and becoming a fixture as somebody who specializes in this. Even if you're introverted, I mean, you can still do this. You don't have to be like a social butterfly and the mayor of your town to be successful. You just need to create those conversations and connections and relationships with people.
Yeah. And it's amazing too, like, how once somebody has experienced what you offer or has heard about what you offer, even how they're, you know, in conversation with a friend or a family member who's like, oh yeah, I've been feeling really like this. And they're like, oh, I know somebody who could like help you out with that. Mm-hmm. It's just amazing when you put yourself out a little bit, like how that can kind of trickle down and people can come from all over the place.
Yeah. And sometimes that trickle down is like the next day. And sometimes the trickle down is like literally a year from now. And so that's the other thing. Like, this is not, you know, I feel like I see stuff often in the online world where it's like, make this amount of money in this many days, or find this many clients in this many days. And it's not a quick process. Like, it, you don't want it to be, though. You want to build a long-term sustainable private teaching practice. That's going to take time. I mean, it's great if it takes you, you know, 3 months or 6 months to build your whole client docket, but more likely you're going to have some people that you're going to meet along the way that are not going to end up being a great fit client, or you're going to hit some of these roadblocks, or you're going to get referrals from people that are not a good fit because they're not super clear yet about what you do, because you're still kind of honing on that as well. And so that's part of the process as well. And I think being patient and knowing that you're planting seeds, but some of those seeds are just going to take a little bit longer to flourish, is totally normal, and it's realistic. So I think a lot of us want it to happen really quickly. And for some of us, it does. Like, some people fill their client dockets really quick, and I'm like, that's awesome. And then, you know, it just really, there's so many different pieces to that pie, but it's also, you know, anything that you want to last, there's a quote, like, anything that you want to last for a long time, doesn't, you know, I forget what it is. Oh, something that you want to last forever doesn't get built overnight, or something like that. So that's a good thing to keep in mind. I'll try to find the real quote because I'm starting it right now. But you know, keep that in mind too. Like, sustainability takes time to build. It would be really a lot quicker to find a bunch of clients that are more, you know, kind of like short-term clients, or you're like kind of on the hamster wheel of like, they're really not a good fit, but they're in your practice right now. Whereas long-term clients, going to take you a little bit longer to find that. And that's okay.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. I think that that's a really good reminder. And I really love what you were saying before about how there's all these other business models that's sort of different from the traditional yoga model, and we can learn so much from them. Is, as you were first saying, like, packages and stuff, I was thinking about a girlfriend of mine who teaches boot camps, and I was like, oh yeah, that's like what she does. Like, that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think that we spend, you know, I think the last like 5 years or so, there's been a lot of stuff with yoga business, and it's so helpful. I mean, I consider what I'm doing to be in that niche as well. But I also think that as much as you pay attention to those voices and you find people that resonate with you in that yoga business realm, it's also really good to not listen to every single thing that everybody is saying, or, you know, really finding what else is working for other people. And that's why I recommend like getting off the computer and like making, I mean, unless the thing is like, if you have an online business like me, then like, yeah, be behind your computer connecting with people like me and you connecting and things like that. But if you're on the ground and you're teaching private yoga lessons, like, those are not your people to connect with 24/7. Your people are, you know, like I said, like the person who runs that CrossFit studio down the street, or the woman who does, I don't know, like the chakra work up the street, things like that. Mm-hmm. And really connecting people like that. Because even if you don't end up becoming a really robust referral network for each other, you are going to create a great relationship and immense value from working and talking with and meeting for coffee with other people in your community. There's one lady here who, she's a holistic nutritionist, and her and I will get together. And this was when I was teaching a lot more private clients, but we would get together and we would just talk about stuff and like, what do you do for scheduling? Oh, what do you do about cancellations? Oh, what do you do about this? What do you do about that? And that's really helpful to have people in your community like that. Not to say that you shouldn't also be friends with other yoga teachers and private yoga teachers, and you connect with other private yoga teachers in other parts of, you know, your community and your area and even online. But don't think that all the answers are just in our industry, because the yoga world is usually, I think, at least 3 steps behind what everybody else is doing.
Yeah.
And I think the more and more stuff that we see, we're seeing a lot of online stuff, which is great. People want to bring their businesses online. They want to be location independent. They want to be like teaching online classes from Bali. I get it. However, I really feel like most people shouldn't be making a jump into passive income until they're making active income. And active income is making money teaching private yoga lessons in person, and then eventually making the jump to passive income. Passive income is way harder than active income. And so you want to get some of these foundational business ideas down. and some of these foundational, like, you know, connection and community and collaboration pieces down. And then from there, you can start to build and, you know, go back to that question, like, what do you want your life to look like? How do you want your business to fit into your life? And all those things. So I think that's really key.
Totally. Yeah. I think that that's really important as well. I want to be mindful of your time, but I was just wondering if you could just tell me quickly about your book.
Yeah. So I just, I would love to talk about the book. I just released the book, The Art of Teaching Private Yoga, on Amazon. It's currently in Kindle form only. And I've been working on this book for what feels like forever. and basically the book is modeled off of my course. So I have a course called the Art of Teaching Private Yoga, and it's an online training course. And it's also a weekend module course that I teach in person, in the US and hopefully beyond at some point. And, it's part business. So it's part really setting up a business that's specific to private yoga. And so that's going to look like these conversations that we're talking about, like having a chat at a coffee shop and making sure the group classes you teach make sense for the work you want to do individually, and paperwork and business basics, like having a website and how your website is, you know, kind of like your brick and mortar if you don't have a physical business, which a lot of us don't. Retention, things like that, like things that are really important for people. And then on the other side, it's all about teaching. So, you know, what does a private yoga lesson look like? And what do you do in the beginning of a private yoga lesson so that you can actually get a feel for what somebody's needs are on a physical level, on an emotional level, mentally, what are they looking for? Were they imbalanced? Were they over compensating? What's going on with range of motion? And then that the teaching side also leads into creating experiences, designing homework that's unique to them, sequencing to the individual. So really a lot of the stuff that, you know, was missing from our 200-hour training, because there's so much to cover that we're not really working on through the lens of private yoga lessons. So the book is essentially the stuff that I cover in the course. It's just that it's in a book, and it's the methods that I use to help people begin to create some foundation and then consistency and refinement with their teaching practice, whether they need help in the business or the teaching side. And for most of us, it's a little bit of both or a lot of both, depending on where we are on our journey.
Very cool. That's amazing. Yeah. And so if people want to learn more about that, where can they find you?
You can find all the work that I do at youandtheyogamat.com. It'll be changing over soon to kateconnellpotts.com, but it'll auto-direct, so no worries. And the book in particular is on Amazon, but you can also find it at youandtheyogamat.com/book. And then I'll tell you a little bit about the book. You can get a free chapter of the book there about finding clients, which is everybody's favorite topic. And then it tells you more about going to buy the book on Amazon as well.
Oh, that's super cool. I love that. Amazing. Well, thank you so much for your time today. It was awesome to talk with you. I feel like I could talk with you for hours about this.
It's almost an hour, and we're like, I feel like we just hopped on. So agreed. Same. And thank you so much for having me. It was awesome to chat.
Yeah, of course. All right. So hopefully everyone enjoyed that interview with Kate. I think that she's so interesting. She has such a business mind and business sense and so many great things to share with everyone on the podcast. And definitely check her out on her website. I will also put the links on the show notes at www.mbomyoga.com. If you want to stay up to date with everything that's new and exciting with the podcast, sign up for the newsletter also on the website, as well as you can follow me along on social media at Amanda Kingsmith on Twitter and Instagram. And as always, thank you so much for listening, and namaste.